Tough choices for Christian parents.
The real issue of this all comes down to the fact that there is no neutrality, and that when we assume that there is, or we pretend that there is, we're opening our kids up to being influenced by strains of thought that we do not agree with.
A special edition this week on the state of public education in Canada and the choices being faced by Christian parents in September. Also, a note about encouraging public figures. And on the feature this week, a final look back at the Booties for Babies campaign.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
It's the last week of June. That means schools, both public and private, have let out for summer holidays across the country. But based on the headlines in the news last week, some parents will no doubt be giving a lot of thought to their educational options in September. There were four stories from different parts of the country, all with a similar theme last week. First of all, from Hamilton, Ontario, a dentist from the Greek Orthodox faith was in court last week. He's suing the Hamilton Public School Board for the right to be notified of curriculum issues that come up, which may create a conflict with the religious values that are taught in his home. Alberto's Polizagopoulos is representing that parent. He says this goes to the fundamental issue of parental rights.
Because of the importance of the case and the issues that are at stake, I think it's quite possible that this ends up at the Court of Appeal and maybe even the Supreme Court. There's clearly several different perspectives. Obviously, my client has a concern from a parental rights or religious freedom perspective, but the other parties here with the school board, they have their own position. The teachers' union came in because they're concerned about how this is going to affect them. And then perhaps of greater concern is the fact that the Ontario government here intervened. So the Ontario government certainly thinks there's something at stake here.
No word on when the Ontario court will issue its decision. Some other stories last week, too. Steinbeck, Manitoba. The public school board there facing a human rights complaint because there's a policy in place that doesn't allow teachers to talk about sexual orientation in elementary or middle school grades. The curriculum in that district, which is heavily comprised of Mennonite residents, expressly says there is to be no discussion of same-sex relationships until students hit high school. In Alberta, the provincial government just announced a major overhaul of the curriculum province-wide and for all schools, not just the public system. The new curriculum to be rolled out over the next 6 years will expressly include education on things like climate change, First Nations and residential school history, and gender identity. This, of course, in the context of Bill 10 and the whole movement in Alberta to force schools to more expressly recognize and even celebrate LGBTQ rights. And in BC, there's a provincial election coming up in less than a year, and the pressure has started to have a discussion about ending public funding for private and independent schools. The leader of the NDP, John Horgan, has hinted his party wants to look at this. That's prompted the BC Federation of Independent School Associations to push back. They've put up a survey online asking BC parents how important party positions on private school funding will be when it comes time to cast their ballots next year. Federation Director Peter Froese says independent schools make a positive contribution to society, and there's also the familiar argument about how they save taxpayers money. But fundamentally, he says, this is about more than parental choice. It's about how British Columbians look at issues of religion and spirituality.
Over a quarter don't believe in a higher power, according to a new poll by Insights West, commissioned by the BC Humanist Association. So they are suggesting that two-thirds of people don't have any religious affiliation or any belief in a faith or a religion. And so the study goes on to suggest that two out of three individuals in British Columbia do not support the government's funding of religious education. I think the whole aspect of religious intolerance in society itself is a much, much bigger issue, because that spans well beyond simply the field of education. It goes into the faith communities, the institutions that faith communities have provided for the good of society. It goes into how faith issues are going to be perceived within the public square, whether faith issues are going to be recognized within legislation in provinces and across Canada. That, to me, is a much more direct concern to people of faith, of all faith, and it's something that's very real.
That online survey, by the way, closes at the end of this month. We've got a link up at the Lighthouse News homepage for BC parents who might want to respond to it. But all these stories, as I said at the beginning, indicate that parents are giving serious thought to their educational choices in September. Another story out of Ontario earlier this month cites a survey showing that 1 in 6 families have considered or are considering pulling their kids out of the public school system there because of those new guidelines on sex education. ARPA policy analyst Colin Postman has been watching all of these developments closely, and he says, fundamentally, almost all of these stories have one thing in common. They all touch on the primacy of parents in the education and upbringing of their children.
The way that Christians see this, typically in the way that society is organized, is that marriage and the family comes above the state when it comes to education of children. And really the family as a unit, and parental rights in particular, are primary, and in nature the natural law is such that the parents of those children have the first say on what happens to them when it comes to their education. And after that, the state is well down the line when it comes to that. And the main thing that I think we learn from Scripture too is that the state is not divine. But that seems to be the conclusion that a lot of people now are starting to see, that now that there's no God in society, that the place of the church and the place of God's authority over our lives is no longer there, that we now have to put some other kind of law in place, some other structure. And they see the state as the solution to that. So rather than increasing individuals' freedoms or the freedoms of parents to choose for themselves what they see as best for those individual children, the state is instead going to come in with a brush and say, these are all the kids that we need to have in this particular system. This is exactly the kind of education they're all going to get. It's all going to be the same, and they're all going to come out on the end looking identical.
ARPA does not take a position on where parents should put their kids, public, private, or homeschool, because it's actually part of the whole parental choice question, and those decisions are best left to parents in their local context. But he says these stories do illustrate a fundamental truth about education. And that is that the endeavor cannot be a neutral enterprise.
Each of those groups, whether it's the parents and those who are in favor of parental rights or those who are looking to further the state and increase the control that the state has over your children's education, both sides of those have a bent. They both have a specific lean to them. They're both trying to get certain issues across, and oftentimes those sides don't agree on a lot of things, right down to fundamental issues of what do you actually teach those kids in school. The real issue of this all comes down to the fact that there is no neutrality, and that when we assume that there is, or we pretend that there is, we're opening our kids up to being influenced by strains of thought that we do not agree with.
Other material this week, ARPA encouraging its supporters to start encouraging. If that sounds a little confusing, here's the context. Last week, a Manitoba MP, Ted Falk, publicly said he wasn't going to be participating in a gay pride parade in his riding. Originally, he did have a scheduling conflict, but that was cleared up. Then he said, conflict or no conflict, he wouldn't be there because he considered the parade to be against his personal values of faith, family, and community. ARPA Executive Director Mark Penninga says that story got him thinking about the notion of encouraging public officials when they take a stand.
It's easy for us to make a mental note to ourselves that they did something good, but not to actually encourage them. So we're trying to make more of a concerted effort to build up those who are standing up for what's right and good.
And Penninga says it doesn't have to be big issues like this, and it doesn't have to be ARPA doing it on everyone's behalf either. Personal contact is also important.
My member of parliament, who happens to be an NDP MP with very different worldview than myself, he decided he's not going to pursue the leadership of his party. And the reason he gave was that he wanted to put his family first. So I sent him a little note expressing my appreciation. Even though he gets hundreds of messages all the time, that one really struck a chord with him. So hopefully we can do things like that more often, building good relationships with our representatives, regardless of what stripe or party they might be from.
Back with more after this.
The House of Commons rose for the summer on Friday, June 17th, and most MPs will be spending considerable time in their ridings this summer. Take this opportunity to meet with your MP, attend an event that they are hosting or that they will be at, or organize one of your own. Continue to build your relationship with your MP while they're in your riding, so that you can continue to engage with them when they return to work on the Hill this fall.
And we're back on the program. The Booties for Babies campaign is done. You'll recall that just before Christmas, ARPA put out a call for knitters and crocheters and crafters across the country to create 1,000 pairs of baby booties in the pro-life cause. Those booties were delivered to Ottawa and eventually ended up in the offices of MPs across Parliament Hill. Nikki Pennings, who's ARPA's chief admin assistant, organized the whole thing, and I had a chance to talk to her last week about the wrap-up of the campaign. We started by talking about the numbers. We were looking for 1,000, and we ended up with, what, over 7,000 pairs of baby booties, which I guess that's the first thing. Now that it's all said and done, you look back and you kind of go, wow.
Yeah, wow sums it up. So the final total was 7,273 pairs, which was just huge. And the response, I think we've said over and over, has been overwhelmingly positive. It's been really cool to see people get engaged that haven't been involved with ARPA before or haven't actively been involved. And we saw people of all ages across the country, people from the reform community and outside the reform community, and we're still having people contact us and say, hey, can we still send in baby booties? So obviously it resonated really well with a broad spectrum of people.
So what's the answer to that question? Can they still send them in?
We are complete. Like, the Booties for Babies campaign, as it was launched by ARPA Canada, is done. We've wrapped it up. The MPs now have received all of the baby booties. So my response to them has been, you know, I'm so glad that you are interested and that you would like to be involved. So why don't you connect with a pregnancy care center in your riding, or find a place where you can connect and do that pro-life activism locally so that they can get engaged. And I said, and you know what, you can totally contact your MP, let them know this is an issue that matters to you. So don't necessarily look to ARPA to be the one to facilitate that. You know now what the idea was, so go ahead and make something happen locally. Yeah, we're definitely encouraging them to carry that on so that it is something that can be a long-term blessing to moms, to agencies, and also a witness to those that are in Parliament.
So the booties have been distributed to MPs with the sort of attached note that says, please send this to your local pregnancy care center. I saw some stuff online on the ARPA page. You know, some of the responses from MPs have been very positive. Talk to me a little bit about that whole piece. Are we getting any booties back from MPs who say, you know what, no, I'm not supportive of this, and take your booties and deal with them yourself?
You know what, that's a really great question. We weren't sure how the MPs were going to respond. So when we sent them the note, we did everything we could to make it as easy as possible. So I researched the pregnancy care centers in every riding as much as possible. It's amazing to see how many places in Canada have pregnancy care centers and where there are gaps. So I said, okay, you know what, MP so-and-so, this is the pregnancy care center in your riding. Please take it to this place. And then we said, if you're not willing to, return it to MP Harold Albrecht, because he had offered to collect them on our behalf. And so I talked to his assistant last week, and she said, so far we've got about 16 packages back. And I asked her, I said, how is that come? Like, are people angry, or how are, because you're on the front lines. And she said, no, we kind of expected, the people that we expected wouldn't necessarily want to participate are the ones that have returned them. But she said 337 MPs received them. And she said, with 16 or 17 packages being returned, she says, that's really, really good.
So you were obviously very involved in this in terms of coordinating it. What's the one sort of overarching impression or story that sticks out for you that goes, you know what, we did Booties for Babies, and this is the thing I'm going to remember most?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's not necessarily a specific story, but it's more just the whole campaign. How many people there are that are willing and ready to get involved in pro-life activism. These people that are saying, I care so much for these children, and this is something that I can do. And there are thousands upon thousands of individuals in our country who are saying, children have a right to life, and this is my way of saying that I am in support of that. So it's just a message to the broader Canadian public that people are willing and they want to help, and this was a really positive way for us to get that message out. I can't think of a negative response. I mean, there was one MP who said, we don't really want to do this, so we returned it to Harold Albrecht, but there wasn't anybody that got mad at us. Everybody was kind of like, oh, that's different. That's really cool. How many did you get? So that's been really, really encouraging, I think, is probably the best answer.
Thanks, Nikki. Just a programming note before we wrap up. June is coming to an end, and that means summer is here, which means we're going to the summer production schedule for Lighthouse News. For the months of July and August, only 2 programs per month. The next one you'll hear will be posted to the website on July 12th.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpaccanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.